again.
Right, hello everyone, it's Jerry from independencelive.net. This is the second part of a two-part show tonight with Marcia Scott from Women for Independence. So this is the Q&A.
So, who wants to ask some questions from the floor? Here we are, front row.
Hi there. It was in regards to the comment about shouty men, and there are some, unfortunately, well, obviously on our side as well, and how do we stop them from dominating the message that we're needing to get out to, especially women, when some of them can be quite intimidating and women have a tendency to quieten down rather than speak up when surrounded by shouty men.
There's no quick answer to that, I think, but I do think there are a couple of things we can do. One is we can establish codes of conduct. I know that sounds even more geeky than the rest of my presentation, but it is a bit about these are, you know, we do expect people not to come in drunk off their face and make a loud noise. There are some unwritten rules in the way we gather and talk about these issues, and I think we need to add to those. So... And part of that will be an explanation of what kind of debate we are expecting people to participate in, and being clear that whoever is managing that debate, so if you have somebody who's chairing, for instance, a discussion or a panel, that they set the rules out really clearly from the beginning, that this kind of engagement is not acceptable in this room, and you will be asked to leave if you do it. And we are very it's very difficult, I think, for us to do that and call out that behavior, especially because it's been acceptable for so long in so many settings. But if we want to do politics differently, we have to. The other thing that I think, one of the other things is we need to demand panels that are representative. And that will help a lot. And I remember being at a debate in out by IKEA, Liberton maybe. Is that out that way? Yeah. Anyway, I think it was. And there was a big audience. It was in a school auditorium. And it was at least 50% women in the room. And yet the first questions from the audience were all, which is very common, were men. There's nothing wrong with those men asking questions, but I'm just saying that it's a really common thing because public spaces have, for a very long time in our lives, been the privilege of men. And also, it's good sometimes, and I think women generally want to get the lay of the land before they stick their heads above the parapet. And one of the things I remember saying to the person who was chairing that was, if you don't protect space for women to be engaged in this conversation. If you don't say, okay, we've had four questions from men, great, glad to have done that, but we're not taking another one until we've had some questions for women. And I know that sounds a little bizarre, but when you do it, it opens the floodgates. And you have to have wait time. Do you know what I mean? So you got to be comfortable with silence, which we're often not, for a little while. But once it starts, then it is every single event that we've done that in has made a huge difference. So there's a couple of things to just redress the balance, level the playing field a bit, I think. And also demanding that the people on the platform are half women. Does that help?
It seems to me that some of the debates that you hear isn't so much about men and women. It's basically the fact that a lot of the argument is sort of technical or about the economy, and it seems quite distant from normal people's lives. Do you think we should be focusing on making it relevant to actual households?
Well, when we talk about the economy, we talk about the fact that most of the unpaid work in our economy is done by women. We talk about the fact that how much more likely women are to be poor, in part because they're doing a lot of unpaid care, because there's a pay gap in Scotland, because they work in low status jobs, because they also are doing caring responsibilities, because the investment bank that we're setting up has not been gender proofed, you know, and there's a whole variety of things around the economy that really aren't the currency and really aren't the North Sea oil that are very relevant to people's everyday lives. And we spent two councils, so two full days, talking about what some of those are. I am telling you, the conversations about universal income, basic universal income, were just, you know, and I kept saying, okay, but there's this issue about how expensive it is, so are there any compromise? No, they were not willing to compromise the fact that it needed to be not means tested, to be available to everybody in Scotland, and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, there was no lack of engagement or interest in the issues of the economy. It's the way the economy is defined and talked about that makes it uninteresting to people, because they were sure interested.
Hi there. I just wanted to say one thing was I've always admired Women for Independence, mainly because it has not had that adversarial attitude to people. It's not no voters, it's people. And I'm a great believer that that's the way forward if we're going to win the next referendum, is don't be adversarial. Like you say, listen. But one of the real issues that I see, and we had a lot of support from the youngsters in the last independence referendum, I see my kids and their friends, and they're less engaged now than they were. And I think that if we could engage them more, it would really, you know, be a boon to us going into the next referendum. I just wonder, how do you think Women for Indy can get more involved in that, or we share ideas between other ES groups to do that?
I think it's like, it's that whole issue of be the change you want to see. So, like I said, we have a young woman who's just turning 18 on our national committee, and she's been on it for 2 years. I think that one of the things we have to do is figure out why our spaces are not welcoming to young people, and ask young people. They'll tell us. And I agree, it was so exciting as they began to get engaged. They're still there, they're just older, like all of us. And I think one of the first things to do would be to go to the folks who were that engaged and say, what worked with you? What do you think will work with the 16 and 17 year olds of now? And also, how do we work? I mean, because it was not across the board. There was what is it, the 24 to 29 year olds were no voters. So that whole thing about if you're old and you're posh, you voted no, and everybody else is a good person. You know, we got to throw that out. But the first thing to do is ask them, I think.
Yeah, question isn't probably an easy one to answer, but I'm very mindful of when I was canvassing the last time, how many women I would meet at the door who didn't consider themselves into politics, and if you asked them why they were going to vote no, it was because I can't stand that Alex Salmond. And you got that time and time again, and I've heard also about I can't stand that Nicola Sturgeon, so it's not just a gender thing. But I think there's a risk with all the trial that's coming next year that we're going to be right back into that, where women quite often will look at personality and the personalities of politics and make assumptions and judgments if they're not informed about the economics and the policies and all of that kind of stuff underneath. So I guess my question is, how do you get past that with someone who is almost shut and closed to how impactful this could be to them? I mean, I really engage with the whole listening thing, but when a listening isn't producing much other than a rant, how to open that space up a little bit more would be useful to kind of have some pointers on.
There's an awful lot in that. So I think the first thing is that we're paying the price of male-dominated, you know, shouty men dominating the discussion for years and years and years. And so we're not going to just be able to rub that out in a minute. So when people identify a person that is the source of the problems that they're experiencing in life, there's a reason for that, because they don't see themselves in any of it, in any of the conversations or the solutions. And it's obnoxious. I mean, I had the same thing. Actually, right in this, because I did some canvassing here before the vote, and I have to say it was quite amusing when I opened my mouth. People didn't want to talk about the referendum. They wanted to talk about New York. But I don't think there's an easy answer to that. And I also think that women aren't, I'm not sure that women's focusing on Alex Salmond, which, and I absolutely had that too, but I also had it from men. And I think a lot of folks didn't want to be challenged, and so they just picked an argument out of the air. I'm not sure how wedded to it they were, or how, I mean, I think it could possibly be relatively easily dislodged. I don't think Alex Salmond is as much of an issue, and I think if we move away from campaigning about creating campaigns around individuals and start looking like the people who are really hated Alex Salmond, do you know what I mean, or really loved him or whatever, then we'll go some way. But I think it's going to be a while. I don't think it's going to be easy to dislodge that notion that whichever side, so is it Gordon Brown or is it, you know, Nicola Sturgeon now, or, you know, whoever it is going to be. We just, all of that, we have to just move away from it. And I think particularly, and maybe this is just my, you know, background, this party politics stuff, we really have to find a way. And it's absolutely fine, I think, to be an activist in your political party. I'm not saying we shouldn't be, but we really need to be careful about how we bring that into the Yes campaign.
Talking about parties, so basically, you know, Paula's been running this Yes Cafe since before. That I think that is a good idea, and that the Yes Cafe in Linlithgow is basically people that are still friends. Like, how many years is it now? And some of them are from Labour, some of them SSP, some of them are SNP, some no party. You know, and I think that is actually a model for moving forward, is actually just getting people around the table of different parties and not talk about party politics, but actually talk about the issues themselves.
Couldn't agree more about that.
Right.
And we need to think, I think, creatively about spaces where you can be somebody who voted no in the past and have conversations. So one of the things that Margaret, who's our coordinator, did was put out a call on social media to see if there were women who had voted no who were planning on voting yes the next time, in order to just try and find out what their transition had been. And she was hoping to get 3 or 4, and she got 35. So I think it's really, you know, and there's two things for us in that. And that was like on one day. You know, there are two things. One is, we don't know what's out there now. And the second thing is, there are a lot of women who are not very visible in the public, you know, debates, who do care desperately enough to be changing their mind, which is a really difficult thing for all of us to do, I think.
We probably need to know, I'll come to you, a bit more about, like, this venture in Linlithgow, the Yes Cafe, because there are other instances in my position as the treasurer of the Scottish Independence Foundation. We've given a bit of cash to a group called the Geary Women from Inverurie, I think. Is that the right pronunciation, Geary? Geary? Yeah. It's spelt Garioch, but anyway, Geary. But anyway, these women have focused on the health service, and they've had a whole series of meetings around the northeast of Scotland. They've distributed, you know, tons, thousands of Brexit is bad for your health leaflets produced by NHS for Yes, which is another group I'm involved in. And in fact, I think one of their members is involved in the meeting that's being held, I think, on Friday this week in Morningside by, I think it's South Edinburgh SNP, with Alison Pollock, who's professor of health economics, and who's a leading critic of the English Health Service and the privatisation of the English Health Service, which I think is on the Colum Keel Centre, New Battle Terrace on Friday. But my point really was that this group of women in rural Aberdeenshire, in an area which was pretty hostile to Yes, has done the same sort of thing of a dialogue which is only tangentially related to independence, and they, by all accounts, have had an amazing interaction with the population.
We call them the Indiquines.
Indiquines.
Well, that's what they call themselves.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of really good things.
Take it down a bit.
That have all, I've been a shouty man, am I? unintentionally. But, you know, there's always been a lot of good messages coming out of Women for Indy, the more conciliatory speech patterns and widening it. I have to say that as a much reviled middle aged, or older than middle aged now, white, male, able-bodied, heterosexual, you do start to feel marginalised. And we're all a multiplicity of identities. We're all... But the thing that we've got in common is the support for independence. Do you feel that there's a danger in the sectionalisation of politics so that it fits into this group and this group and this group and the interaction between them, and we're losing the overall thrust of the message of making Scotland a more inclusive, better, fairer place as an independent country?
Possibly not going to like my answer to that.
So
if we had that approach, then I would say we wouldn't have to be talking about how do we help women be visible and be part of the of a campaign that's successful this time. It's always been sectionalized. It's just that women have not been in the section. So I guess what I would say is the realities of life in Scotland and the rest of the UK and the rest of Europe are that women are marginalized in public life, in economic life, and much more likely to be victims of violence in their private lives. And until those realities change, I don't think men have to worry about being marginalized, because men are more likely to have money, they are more likely to be involved in the powerful decisions that are made, and they are less likely to worry about safety in their personal lives. Now, I am not saying that all men are privileged or that all men are enjoying all of their human rights, because we absolutely know that they are not. But this isn't a debate about men. This is a debate about how do we create a bigger conversation and a bigger audience. And we didn't do it last time, and we paid the price. And so, you know, we are saying absolutely, we welcome your voices. They just need to be part of a larger set of voices. And sometimes that might mean you need to be a little quieter so we can hear the other voices.
I move the mic a bit further down.
Anya, David, you probably need a mic on the front row there.
And if it makes you feel any better, I'm a shouty woman.
I'm thinking of this from a sort of political angle. It seems to me that while the SNP has, I think, a very good role model as a leader, the First Minister, I think she...
I spent an hour with her this afternoon.
Did you? She seems to project exactly the right image and say the right things, and I fully support all of that. However, I think being the First Minister means she's probably curtailed in what she's able to say. So I wonder if it would be helpful if there was the SNP had a woman from the Yes side pushing the Yes campaign from a woman's point of view, because there's talk that the Yes campaign is going to be led by a man again. And I wonder if there should be both.
I think that there are two things really in that. I think there's the job the SNP needs to do to address its gender issues, just like the Labour Party, just like the Greens, just like, and that is a very separate question about from who should head the Yes campaign, which is not necessarily the SNP.
I think we're probably getting towards the end, but if anybody's got another question or point that they want to make, okay.
Hello, I enjoyed your presentation and the conversation so far. The thing that struck me recently, I go and I get sweeties and stuff on a Tuesday after the cafe meetings, and the shop I'm in, there's a young man works there. I don't know if he's a learning difficulty, high functioning or what, but he tends to, but he's Labour, and he bawls and shouts at me and stuff like that. However, and it's all the lies that are promulgated in the press and stuff like that, but when that last poll came out that showed a surge for Indy,
and didn't we all do a happy dance?
Yeah. And he was very mollified at that, you know, he was very quiet and very quiet. And it was really interesting when he came out, because he said to me, you know, they're getting the money from London and blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, what would you do in an independent Scotland if we ran out of money? Now, I was quite taken aback when I said, that won't happen. But it's you can't engage it because it's the shop, but it made me think about people with fears.
Yeah.
Right. Now, as I say, this is the guy said, and so basically, it's when we're asking people why they wanted to know, what are your fears?
Yeah.
What do you fear?
I think we should ask them their fears. What are your best hopes for Scotland, for your family, for your community?
And even if they come out and they say a figure or whatever, say, but what are you really saying? Beyond what
they say. Yeah, I don't know the answer to whether we talk about people's fears a lot, because I feel like when last
allow them to have a space for
absolutely
for you acknowledging them as human beings.
Yeah,
and
that's the listen first thing,
yeah.
I think,
yeah,
and that's why we ask people, and it was really hard if you're somebody like me, you know, to let somebody say things that I know are not true,
yeah,
and not challenge them. But the reality is, it really didn't matter whether they were true or not. They believed them, and I needed to know that. But
I come from a counseling background, so that's why.
There you go. But I think it is really difficult if we shut down the conversations too early.
I think we'll draw the evening to a close. I have to say, it's been a fascinating chat that you gave us. And very, very enjoyable, and made me think a little bit, you know, not just on the women issues, just on the general interaction issues and learning the lessons of the last Indy ref. I think we're probably, those of us who've been in the SNP a long time or have it in our family, you know, in West Lothian, because Queen's Ferry is still sort of in West Lothian. I think Mark in the back there would be able to regale tales of his dad in the sort of Labour SNP contests in West Lothian. And I joined the SNP, well, I got involved about the age of 14 because I had an SNP badge and the local postman was a member of the SNP, and I remember going out, and I have to say at that period in the 60s that I think you could describe it as warfare between the Labour Party and the SNP was vicious. You know, I remember going down and having bricks thrown and this sort of thing, and so there's a long history in places, especially in West Lothian, and it's a lot of re-education has to be done.
I worked for West Lothian Council for 10 years. I get it, trust me. And let me tell you, when I was campaigning for Yes, there was a Labour Council, and I had to keep my head way down.
Anyway, once again, just join us in thanking Marcia for an excellent talk. And just one last point, of course, on Saturday there's the big march in Edinburgh. Now, whatever you feel about marches or
You know, some people are dead keen on them, some people are not keen on them, some people are keen on flags, and lots of us are not particularly. But, you know, remember that perhaps the pressure we just have to remind Boris Johnson as well as Nicola Sturgeon that there is a demand for independence, and it's one way of showing it.
Sorry, can I just say that I have apparently 300 leaflets of the schedule of All Under One Banner, because the guy from Yes Borders came to the event yesterday and said, can you help us distribute these out in Edinburgh so that we get the biggest possible audience at the march. So, but I've mislaid them. They're around somewhere. If you want a few of these, and just to hand out half a dozen or on the stalls and things like that, then just give me a shout and I'll find them and put them in your hand. All right? Thanks very much.
Right, that is us now. Thank you for watching, and hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for sharing. If you shared it, you can always share it now. So just before you go, just be aware that we have our quarterly crowdfunder on at the moment for Independence Live's full-time coordinator. You'll be able to find that at indielive.radio. So there's a page for the crowdfunder there, indielive.radio. Okay, love, peace and Scottish independence. See you on Saturday in Edinburgh. Oh, wait a minute.